righty. Appreciate that singing. I enjoy that song, and trust that you do too. And more than just words, that it's just a really should really strum the chords of your heart, because He is a God that man. Without Him, we don't breathe. Without Him, we don't live. Without Him, we don't do anything. And so I appreciate that. But opportunity again, going into the book of Ecclesiastes. We are going to continue in our study of where Solomon has now come to a point as he was looking down chapter 3. We saw everything at a time and a season. There's a phase of life for everything. And because of that, he goes on and continues to say that it's almost in his mind that in verse 22 of chapter 3, I perceive that there is nothing better than a man should rejoice in his own work, for that is his portion, for who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? God is saying, just enjoy the life I gave you. I was talking to an individual and there was doing an assessment of the spiritual gifts. And I got to thinking about an assessment of spiritual gifts. And that's good, because sometimes, you know, the churches will pass them out and you get to see what your spiritual gift is. But they were assessing this individual who's been in ministry for a long time to seeing if he was any good or not after 30 years of ministry. And I'm like, that's interesting how they're going to take a man's business world mindset and put a assessment to this man's spiritual gift given by God. And I guarantee the questions didn't line up. Because, you know, we have a gift from God. We have a privilege from God that He has given us, that He has given us life. He's given us the life we have. And man, we need to take what God's given us, take who we are and how He's allowed us and what He's allowed us to become, and just continue to live for Him. So we mentioned in the beginning of chapter 4 that he now is going to, as we said, verses 1 through 3, it was an alternative response to just live in a life, be joyful. And in verse 1 through 3, we saw the gloomy despair, and again about the tears of the oppressed. In verse 1, and also the oppressor was powered. Verse 2, I praise the dead, which are already dead, more than the living, which are yet alive. Solomon said, man, no, all those who have already dead, they've got it made. They're dead, they're gone, they're in the presence of God. It's us sorry saps down here that are in trouble. You know, we're the ones that have to keep putting up with this thing. We have to keep putting up what we call life and this journey and the world we live in. So Solomon says, man, for those guys who are dead, man, praise them. But then he goes on one step further and says, even yet better, they that were never born yet, because they've never experienced the evil and the pain of this world. And so, you know, he brings it to those who are alive, those who are dead, those who haven't even been born yet. So it sets up a very gloomy offsets what we saw in the latter part of chapter 3. Beginning in today, we're going to look at just a few verses, but this section, we're not going to look at the whole section tonight, but this section goes from verse 4 to 16. And in chapter 4, verse 4 through 16, what he's bringing out now is, and it's interesting, I just want to point out real quick, and it says in verse 4, and again, I considered all the travail and every right work that is of man is envied of his neighbor. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. Go down to verse 16. There is no end of all the people, even of all that have been before them. They also that come after shall not rejoice in him. Surely this is also is vanity and vexation of spirit. You have that same phrase, vanity or vexation of spirit. And all that is this is meaningless. It's you're chasing after the wind. So Solomon is going to say in verse 4 and verse 16, and then he's going to parenthesize in between there the characteristics, basically, how everything is meaningless. So we got our parameters. Those verses are going to have inside them the idea of, again, the characteristics of how meaningless life is. So we're going to start there, and one of the things that he points out as he characterizes the motivation or the incentives of labor. And so he's going to say, listen, how many guys have worked hard, women have worked hard all their life? And I tell you, the closer I get to the age of supposedly old enough to do something different, I won't say retirement because Helen already hollered at me. About not allowed to retire. So it's doing something different. But when you get to that point, and you know what I know, especially working in a hospital, I mean, you've heard me say it before, time and time again, people just get to that age, 16, a little bit beyond, and they're just getting exciting to live their dream. And one day, boom, a fall, a disease, a death, stroke, whatever. And, you know, the truth of the matter is we wear out. Our bodies are not intended to live forever, at least not now in the sinful state. That's why the angel sat at the garden gate and would not allow Adam and Eve back into the garden for fear they would eat of the tree of life. You see, they ate of the tree of good and evil. And God said, you're not going to eat from the tree of life because I don't want you to remain in that state forever. So put a cherubims at the gate of the garden. So now we have this concept of, you know, we have this big dream and we're going to do all these things and everything's going to happen and boom, something in our body wears out and everything changes. Everything changes with a phone call, with a heartbeat. And so when we put that into perspective, Solomon says in this incentives that we have to work so hard do not justify the fact that it's still meaningless. It doesn't change it. It doesn't justify us working. It doesn't. It's still meaningless. So let's jump into it a little bit. And we're going to look at the first few verses. Look at verse 4. And we're going to go through 4, 5, and 6 tonight. It says, again, I considered all travail, and as we read, and every right work that is of man is envied of his neighbors. This also is vanity of vexation of spirit. Or meaningless. The fool foldeth his hands together and eateth his own flesh. Better is a handful with quietness than both the hands full with travail and backstation of spirit. That word meaningless, or that, as King James puts it, the backstation of spirit, again, meaningless, chasing after the wind. It's another way to interpret that. And I think the meaningless, chasing after the wind, to me, is a better understanding. It's a better interpretation of that. So when he's stating that again, what he's saying is the very first inappropriate incentive that we work so hard is because we envy our neighbor. Now just think through that. And I'm not going to say we all do that, but there are many things. And I'm guilty of it. Maybe you're guilty of it. You know, you see somebody get something new, or, you know, I'll pass by a yard where there's like a dozer and all these nice man toys sitting there rusting. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? I would love to have one of them. And you're sitting there letting, you know, it's probably not the right thing to do. But anyway, so that's what Solomon said. We envy the neighbor. And that's what he's saying in verse 4. Consider all travail and every right work, that for this a man is envied by his neighbors. And so one of the wrong incentives, as he says, this labor and all the achievement basically springs from man's, or the envy of his neighbor. And again, what does he say in that same verse? It is meaningless. It is chasing the wind. To envy something that someone else has is basically of no good. So as Solomon puts that together, interesting. And then he goes on and explains in verse 5 and 6, some uncertainty really exists about the meaning of verse 5. Folding of hands and eating his meat or eating his flesh, ruining himself, really just talks about destruction. Verse that goes with that is Proverbs, chapter 6, verse 10 and 11, says, yet a little sheep, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall thy poverty come as one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed man. So basically what he's saying is that this folding of the hands in the scriptures was used for different ideas. So it's hard to interpret verse 5. But in view of what verse 5 says, it refers to a condemnation of contentment. It refers to being content. So when we look at verse 5, the fool foldeth his hands together and eateth his flesh. And basically, and viewing that as the contentment with the simple needs of life, eat his own meat, eat his not his personal flesh, but you work for your paycheck, you go to the store and you buy your food, enjoy the food you bought. Don't envy the next guys. Don't envy you because that guy's having a quarter steak, a New York strip steak, and you're getting chip steak. Don't envy. Enjoy the chip steak. It tastes just as good. It's meat. And so what Solomon's trying to say in a little bit of a crazy way is the folding of the hands is contentment. And it's interesting, you understand body language, and when somebody begins to talk, and they're talking back and forth, and the guy just goes like this. What does that say to you? I'm done. I dare you. There's all kind of different things you can read from somebody who just folds their hand when you're trying to talk to them. And so what Psalm is saying is the folding of the hands is a symbol of contentment. I'm okay. I have what I have. I have me. I have my hands. It's okay. And so with that understanding, really the simple needs of life, and we need to be content. Paul says in Philippians, I have learned to be content. We want contentment, but we don't want the learning process. That's the hard part. And then Paul didn't say, I have learned as if I have arrived, I have achieved. Paul just says, listen, I'm learning to be content. Because the more I live my life, the more I'm losing myself and gaining more of God, I am seeing the value in that. And I really think that's something that we should be saying, telling ourselves all the time. Solomon says the same thing. It lose who you are and gain more of him, because envying what your neighbor has is not the way in which it should be done. Verse 6, again, is the same thing, talking about the hands. Better is a handful with quietness. It again, the quietness is contentment or rest, a tranquility. Just to be able to take a step back and fold your hands and say, you know what, I'm okay. I've got a roof over my head. I may not have two vehicles in my driveway, but I got one that works. I may not have all the big toys, but I do have my share of stuff. It's a matter of looking at what you have and being content. Because Solomon says, again, going back to verse 4, labor, the wrong initiative is I'm just going to work harder. I'm going to go work more hours because I want what the neighbor has. I want the stuff. Solomon says it's all meaningless. The stuff is meaningless. We already went through the stuff. Solomon said at the end of chapter 3, what shall be after him? Who's going to tell Solomon how all of his riches are going to be spent after he's gone? Because after he's gone, whatever he has left doesn't matter to him. And so, interesting enough, I think as he puts this into perspective of the hands being folded, one hand of quietness is better than two hands of toil, anxiety, and basically anxiously striving for something that is meaningless. And as I studied through this, I really began to think after this, and I'm like, all the work that we do, what is the purpose? To live life or to live a better life? To achieve or to overachieve because people are watching? Why do we put all the time into what we do? And, God says that obviously that we are to do it for him, for his glory and for his honor. We are to accomplish things in this life. So, again, putting that in perspective, the first part of that is sometimes it's motivated by envy, which is completely wrong. We're not going to have time to jump into the next section because it's 7 through 12, but just want to highlight this one. And again, ask yourself as you look at all the things that you do and all the work that you do and all the stuff that you have, it's better to have one hand of quietness than two hands of stuff. That's how I interpret that verse. One hand of quietness compared to two hands of stuff. Because I'm realizing, and I believe everybody realizes, that the more stuff you have, it seems like the more busy you become. And then it seems like the more tired you are, the more anxious you become, the more, why am I doing what I'm doing? And it's not because you don't know, it's because of the stuff. The things you had to have, well, why spend money on something when you're not going to go out and use it or go out and enjoy it? And I say that as I studied through this, I went into the drove into the garage and I'm looking around like, I got a lot of stuff here. And it's my garage. Don't touch my stuff in my garage. And so, interesting enough, I've got a lot of things that could probably be thrown away in my garage. But it's a mindset that has been ingrained in us in America. You can never have enough. You got to have one more, or one a little better. Trade it in, get a bigger one, get a better one. And that has been the marketing of the world since it began to market stuff. And we'll blame Sears and Roebuck on it back in the 1880-something. they published the stuff. So, and I think Helen gave me an article about a shotgun that Sears and Roebuck sold for, I think it was $3.75. And it was from the third volume of the Sears and Roebuck catalog. So it was back early in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And I wish I could still buy that shotgun for $3.75. Yeah. Today that same shotgun would probably be worth about $300 or $400. Or at least I'd have to pay that much to get it. Or more. So, and again, as the world goes, so does everything else up higher and higher, which causes you to work more and more for it. And Solomon says, listen, you got to understand it's meaningless. In the scope of longevity of life, in the scope of purpose of life, in the scope of eternity, most of the things we work for is meaningless. He said, we have to be careful. Don't envy the next guy. Because when you start envying, you start working harder for stuff that really don't matter. And I think that's a true statement that Solomon brings out. Let's pray. Father, we thank you again for this portion of the study. Father, it's very few verses, but how powerful. Father, I really believe in our heart and life it is an understanding of the power that envy can have in our lives. It causes us to work. It causes us to put you on the second shelf. And this stuff becomes a priority. And God, I just pray that it's not that we have to live the simple, minimalist life that we have nothing. But God, I just pray that we learn to be content with what we have. Not going out always wanting more and always wanting a little newer, a little bigger. But God, just we thank you for the life you've given us. We thank you for the ability to enjoy what we have. And Father, as we enjoy that, I pray that we just simply thank you for it and glorify you in it. But Father, may we never let it take your place. God, we just pray this in your Son's name. Amen. Alrighty, I really appreciated those.